Happy Monday to you, everyone. A little bit later in the program, we will be joined by Jack Darren. He's the director of the Sierra Club here in Illinois. And one of the things we're talking about is more and more cities are pledging, promising, committing to go to 100% clean energy. And they're just out with a report on that. You know, the federal government is, taken its foot off the accelerator, I think, when it comes to a lot of environmental issues. Cities are stepping up. Mayor Emanuel had that summit in Chicago among mayors just last week. We're going to talk to Jack about efforts to go completely green energy in cities. I think the closest city here that is committed to it is Madison, Wisconsin. So that's coming up. Randy Schaefer will be along to talk about digital media as well in the second half hour. But we usually start on Mondays with the folks from Chicago. You know, Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis are in the studio. Welcome both back. Thanks for coming in today. Appreciate it.
What's up, Steve?
Okay. Well, I'm kind of excited because you guys have your gift guide, and there are some cool things. I've dog-eared them and put them in the Chicago Inno catalog on my kitchen table. We'll see how it works. But before we get to that, we've talked about this company before called Beyond Meat. I'm not sure it's with you guys or with whom, but I know it was Sam Bumkamp from the Tribune, but they are a meatless, plant-based product that tries to make themselves taste like or feel like hamburgers, right? And they just got a lot more cash.
They did, yeah. So Beyond Meat is L.A.-based, so not Chicago-based.
Oh, but, really? I thought they were Chicago-based.
So they're L.A.-based, but they got their big funding round, $55 million, from totally Chicago investors. So, the round was led by Cleveland Avenue, which is a new venture firm founded by the former McDonald's CEO, Don Thompson, and Tyson Foods, which has a venture fund that launched just last year, and it's actually based in Chicago. So those are the two funders that were behind that round. That,
but I remember the Tyson Fund was introduced. The idea was that chickens aren't going to last forever, or that the market was going to change. They're going to have to find different things, and this is sort of the money Tyson's putting up to find that solution.
Exactly. And there's a lot of food startups in and around the Chicago and the Midwest area, so they definitely wanted to kind of set up shop here. So it's actually funny, the Beyond Meat folks sent our office a sample, and so I recognize it because it had a little sticker that said Beyond Meat, and I was familiar with the company, and our sales guy, Josh, was not, and he tasted it, and he was loving it, and I was like, hey, you know that's not actual cow, right? And he totally fooled him.
When I thought they were Chicago, I was going to try to get them in because I really want to try it. I guess I could pay for it.
Well, yeah. So I think, yeah.
Catherine's laughing at me. I'm in radio, Catherine.
Yeah. So it's in stores around the country. They got this new funding round to really kind of triple down on their production.
And they're in a lot of restaurants, right? And they're going to go in. Was it TGIF?
Yeah. TGI Fridays. They're going to start doing that in 2018.
Okay. So you tasted it. You tasted what would have been a burger, right?
If you handed me that burger and another burger, I guarantee you I would not be able to tell you which one was the plant-based
burger.
So
we're talking texture then, too, and feel.
Texture and feel and taste, it tasted exactly like a regular
and
hamburger.
And that's, Catherine, have you tried it?
I have not tried it, but I want to.
Because you're only a meat-based eater? You won't
no.
try plant-based? But so what sets them apart then from other, soy burgers or whatever.
I think it's the taste. I've had the veggie burgers before, it was night and day between the two. So I think what their real benefit is that they have figured out a way to get this plant based burger to really actually taste
feel like
a hamburger.
Yeah. I think that's because I'm much more inclined to go toward fake chicken. Mm-hmm. You know, we have fake chicken at home. Because that feels different. It feels a little more like tofu or beans or things like that. So that's the hard thing to pull off with burgers. But here we've got big Chicago money behind these guys. Mm-hmm. Okay. So also, I know what. Lumenade is also a company that we've talked about here. And they have had a Kickstarter campaign, right, Catherine?
Yeah. So Lumenade, they're a Chicago-based startup, and they make a solar-powered and waterproof lantern, and it's usually designed for emergencies. But they just launched a new product last week on Kickstarter, and they totally crushed through their goal. As of last Friday, they had raised $78,000 of their $20,000 goal. So it was a really big triumph for them. And it's interesting to see because, they have a really big philanthropic initiative behind their company, so they use their funds to donate to hurricane relief. So
one of the things the new product looks pretty cool to me. I mean, I'm a suburbanite, I've got yard lights, but these are Bluetooth, right? So you can change the color of the light if you want, or
You can change the colors lights, you can control the brightness, and you can set light schedules, so have it come on at 8 o'clock, you know, in the summer when it gets dark or whenever.
The summer, it's coming back. The days are, well, they're still getting shorter. All right, Jim Dahlke, one other one before we'll take a break and then get to the gift list. But there's a startup in Chicago dealing, and I love this, Amity Chicago, where there are a couple of counselors, right? Their husbands are in the startup biz. So they've taken marriage counseling and brought them to founders of startups?
These are, yeah, exactly. So this is Amity Chicago, and this is a business founded by two family therapists whose spouses were in the startup world. One was a VC and one was a startup founder, and they were seeing how their spouses were struggling to kind of deal with a lot of the issues that they also saw.
You don't listen to me.
Communication, the number one thing. And so a lot of the issues that couples saw in romantic relationships, couples in business relationships were seeing the same thing.
So, and I know they're working with tech stars, right? So that was probably thrown in there. But it's a weird thing for a couple of startups, entrepreneurs, to say, okay, we're going to go into marriage counseling essentially together to make sure this works, right? I mean, are they looking just to fill a need, or are they looking to really grow a big business here?
So the author of The Founder's Dilemma, Harvard Business School professor, he examined 10,000 startup founders, and about 65% of the startups fail due to founder conflict. So founder conflict is a reason that a lot of new businesses don't make it.
Okay. So I was thinking that the founders split, but I guess if the founders split, the business fails.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there is a reason. Yeah. There's a real reason for these guys to go into that. I said guys. I keep thinking in that way, but
exactly right. So like the issues that you see in a marriage are often like the same communication struggles that two people who are founding a business have. I mean, think about the stress that's involved in doing 80-hour work weeks, trying to keep a business off, trying to raise off the ground, trying to get funding. There are struggles that co-founders face, and so then
Then the baby's got to take the ACT exam, and where's the scholarship money going to come from? All of that stuff. All right, Jim Dahlke here, Catherine Davis from Chicago Inu as well. They're out with their gift guide. You can read that online. Where do we find it?
Check it out at ChicagoInno.com.
ChicagoInno.com. We'll talk about some of them coming up. The visit from Chicago Inno, sponsored by Illinois Tech's Stewart School of Business, and we thank them for that. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno are in the studio, and Christmas is around the corner, right? A little shop. You got your shopping done, Jim?
Almost, yeah. This past weekend was a big one for me.
Catherine?
Yeah, same. I actually got a pretty big chunk done this weekend.
Okay, well, so then your work here with the gift guide is absolutely of no use to you, unless you've already purchased. But the Chicago Inno has a list of what these are, Chicago startup gifts that you're suggesting?
Exactly, yes. It's certainly not too late to get your last minute gifts in, and we wanted to do a list here that showcased gifts that you can get for people, men, women, cheap, expensive, all built from Chicago startups.
Okay, and it's only December 11th, so it's, right? So it's
plenty of time.
Plenty of time. These even aren't last minute gifts yet. Paper airplane launcher and lab combo.
Yeah.
I think this is the sort of thing that I would buy for a kid, but if I received it, I don't know if I could do it, but it's a great way to sort of get kids coding.
Exactly. And why throw a paper airplane with your hand
right.
when you can program a little machine to launch this bad boy for you? Yeah, so this is from Chicago-based Make Exchange, and it's a tool to help kids learn how to code and launch an airplane in the process. So they use their kind of coding skills that they learn from the program to figure out how to engineer this little machine to shoot off a paper airplane.
So I'm looking at it, and it almost looks like a pitching machine. Where the airplane is in between.
Very similar to that, yeah.
And you have to somehow write code that will make the wheel spin?
Going to kind of teach kids sort of the building blocks, the basics of kind of coding technology or coding language, and they're going to use that to work with the little airplane launcher and figure out how to get this thing off the ground.
Okay, so that's for the little kid. And then for the older kid, are reflectables, or what's that
yeah,
about?
Yeah, so the reflectables are these glasses built by a Chicago maker, Scott Urban, and they are glasses that you can use them in a nightclub.
They make you look like a raccoon.
Right, yeah. So yeah. They glow when there's light on them, and you can use them kind of like out when you're just to have a kind of a fashion statement, or like while you're riding a bike. They're great sort of safety equipment.
So
as well.
The function would be if you're out riding a bike and then a car's coming toward you, they would see you like show
exactly.
them hey, like raccoon eyes. So
yeah.
So that's good. If you've had a few too many and you want to be funny in the bars.
Same benefit, exactly, yeah.
Well, not the same benefit.
you're shown to other people, whether you're making a statement on your bike or in the bar.
And that's reflecticles.
Reflecticles.
Catherine, tell me about Hydrate.
Yeah, so the Hydrate Spark Smart Water Bottle, it helps you track your water intake to meet those daily hydration goals. So I know I'm always concerned about that, trying to chug as much water as possible to make sure that I'm hydrated. But, you know, this water bottle, it actually works with a hydration app, Fitbit, and the Apple Watch. So it's pretty versatile as far as, you know, people being able to sync their devices to it.
Okay, and cool. And how much was that?
About $55.
Okay, that's not bad. That's probably what you guys usually spend on me, so I could go for that. Oars and Alps face wash?
Yeah, so Oars and Alps is a new startup in Chicago, and they do men's skincare products. So they're all about products for men. So they've got a face wash, an eye cream, and a deodorant. And they take ingredients, all natural ingredients, sourced from the Arctic Circle. Their products are made with alpine caribou moss.
Okay, I was going to ask you, what does that mean if it's from the Arctic Circle? It's alpine caribou moss?
Alpine caribou moss.
So does that mean it grows on the caribou?
It must, yeah.
Moss that grows on the caribou? Okay, but they're a Chicago company.
Chicago-based company.
I don't think I've heard of them yet.
Yeah. A couple of really interesting founders. I mean, they're really tackling a great vertical, right? Like getting into really owning the men's skincare brand. We're seeing a lot of startups kind of pop up in men's care.
Is that a pretty complicated field?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, you know, getting men interested in that is can be.
You think about like where the Dollar Shave guys have gone, right? Like they were able to kind of produce like a startup, trendy men's men's care line, and these guys are kind of doing something a little similar, but more around the like lotion. And
okay, well, I was going to say one more. Let's do two together. Dress Code Tech, which will make a bracelet, and then what's this other one? De Rigueur.
Yeah, so Dress Code Tech is interesting because they really let you really create like kind of a stylish bracelet based on kind of how you feel about yourself. So you go into their website and you say you want to type "I am brave" or "I am courageous" or "I am smart," and the bracelet says "I am," and then the other word, the keyword, is in zeros and ones. So it's all kind of like computer code. So it allows you to sort of like incorporate tech and fashion.
Oh, so you've got a computer code for your descriptor.
So for "I am brave" would be like "I am 01010001. So that kind of thing.
Okay, and then real quick, the ring thing.
Yeah, so this is De Rigueur Designs, and they allow you to use a smartphone to basically act as a ring sizer. So you hold up your smartphone camera to your hand, it will tell you your ring size, and then we'll 3D print you a ring. They're pretty neat. Most rings have the initials of somebody's name, and so it's a really neat way to kind of get a ring that is, one, definitely going to fit, and it is pretty unique design with some neat tech elements.
All right, very cool. Some nice ideas, Chicago ideas for gifts this year. I'll post them up on my Facebook and Twitter and all that. Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis, thanks for coming by. 12:37 on this Monday afternoon. All right, we're going to jump straight to the phone line. Jack Darren is on the phone. He's the director of Sierra Club's Illinois chapter. Jack, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Steve, thanks. Good afternoon.
I was going to say welcome back. I know we've talked from time to time, but I don't think it's ever been on this program, so it's nice to have you here. It's no secret that the Trump administration has a different view of the environment and clean energy and all of that than did the Obama administration or the Bush administration, for that matter. So we're seeing now more and more cities, I guess in individual states as well, taking the initiative. California certainly has done that. The mayor had that big summit here in Chicago just last week. I would imagine that's kind of an example of cities going on their own to set their own norms, right? Is that sort of typical of what we're seeing?
It is. And, you know, I think you could say the Trump administration has a different view than the world.
Well, I was going to leave that one for you, Jack.
Now that war-torn Syria has managed to join the Paris Agreement, we are now alone among countries in not being in it with the rest of the world, literally, in trying to move towards a clean energy future. So let's say
that again for me. So Syria, I know what, within the last month or so, signed up for the peace accords, or the Paris Accords. That means the United States truly is the only country in the world that is not on that document?
That is correct. And that's why it was really refreshing to see. It's been a very difficult year, obviously, for all of us who are working to try to move towards a clean energy future. And to see Chicago last week as a showcase for good things that are happening here, good things that we hope are going to be happening soon, and mayors from around the world talking about their power to make a difference and make sure that we don't lose critical progress. We have very little time, according to scientists, to make major changes in how we use energy if we're going to avert the worst consequences of climate change. So we can't wait for change at the federal level. We've got to start making changes now here in the states and at local level.
And I know that you guys, the Sierra Club, just had a report out about cities ready for making that commitment to 100% clean energy. I want to talk about what's involved in that, but I was reading in some of the documentation that there already are 5 cities in the country that are using 100% clean energy.
There are 50 cities that have set that goal, and there are some cities that have actually been able to actualize it. They are smaller cities, but there are cities small and large that have made that bold commitment of 100% renewable energy. Now, Chicago has made that commitment for its public buildings, and there are a lot of buildings when you consider schools and fire departments and public housing. There are a lot of public buildings in Chicago that will be moving to 100% renewable energy over the next several years. We're excited for that to happen and then ultimately to set that same goal for our entire community.
But the towns we're talking about are the cities are, so every house in the neighborhood, right, is using clean energy. All energy used within that municipality is clean energy in one way or another?
That's correct. Most are in the planning stages. To get a good plan, you first have to have a goal, right? And scientists and economists are both telling us now that this is possible. This is no longer a matter of whether or not we have the technology and whether or not we can afford it. It's really whether we have the political will to decide that we're going to do it.
But it's not just a matter of the city council or, in the case of Wisconsin, a common council voting on it and doing it, right? So let's take Madison. They're one of the 10 cities. And so they have pledged to become 100% green energy, but they get their energy from an energy company, right? So the mayor just can't be behind it. The utilities have got to be on board to make it happen as well.
We do. And, you know, we're encouraged about that because we just last week celebrated the anniversary of a new energy law in Illinois, the Future Energy Jobs Act, which we worked on with a broad coalition, including Commonwealth Edison, to dramatically ramp up, not yet to 100%, but to the first 25% of wind and solar powered Illinois. We're going to do that with a lot of projects that we feel like are the first big steps to building this clean energy economy here.
Who's got the leverage? I'm sorry, go ahead, Jack.
Madison is also a reminder that northern cities can do this, that the sun is... We see more sun than people realize. It happens to be cloudy at the moment in Chicago, which certainly happens. But we definitely have enough sun. There are states that are way ahead of us in solar. They're at the same latitude, states like Colorado, New Jersey, Massachusetts, countries like Germany, that can do this, solar in particular, at northern latitudes.
Who has the leverage in the equation, though? And let's just stick with Madison because they're going to be dealing with it. You know, the city government or the utility company, which I think it's Madison Gas and Electric, that services them. I mean, I would imagine there's not an equal base of power there. Who's got the power?
Well, you know, utilities and cities have to work together for a number of reasons. For instance, you know, cities give utilities the right to run their grid through our towns, right? In Illinois, with ComEd, it's called our franchise agreement. So they're always working on different conditions that the utility has to meet for the customer, in this case, the city. And I think what you see is cities starting to look at more and more envelope-pushing clean energy measures. It is true. Madison is currently getting almost 90% of its electricity from fossil fuels. So this is a bold commitment. It is going to take time to work with the utility and the whole community to figure out how to do it. But again, you really don't get You don't build a strong plan that includes all the members of the community before you set that bold goal.
So if the goal is set, then they've got the plan together and they've got the players on board, I guess. Jack, we're talking to Jack Darren, the director of the Sierra Club's Illinois chapter, and we talked about Chicago a little bit, but tell me about other communities around the state. I mean, is there another sort of real leader when it comes to municipal green energy around here, or someone who could really use a kick in the pants?
Well, we've seen a lot of mayors in Illinois from a lot of different types of communities. This is not only big cities like Chicago, but suburbs like Evanston, like Oak Park, but some you might not immediately think of, places like Schaumburg and Park Forest and Aurora, downstate communities like Bloomington Normal, even Carbondale. You know, it has carbon in the name of it in coal country. Carbondale has a climate action plan. So this is one of the things that really is refreshing about working with mayors and city councils on issues like climate change is partisan politics are often very slow to creep into it. And mayors are more likely to be focused on doing things and delivering services every day than winning rhetorical arguments. So when they say they're serious about climate change and clean energy, we're confident that's not really just about the words, but actually about providing services and a better future for their residents.
You know, it's funny you say Carbondale, so that makes me think of Coal City and Carbon Hill, a little bit closer to the Chicago area. Get those two on board, and then you're in action, Jack.
That's right. So Illinois does have a fossil fuel history, which is you can read in some of our town names. Yeah. But even those communities are seeing what the future is.
Yeah, that's right. We have a lot of things that happened in our history, and then we move on and do things differently. Jack Darren, the director of the Sierra Club here in Illinois. Great to talk to you. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great day.
Randy Schaefer is in the studio. She's a digital editor at the Chicago Tribune and helps us keep track of what's what on social media. And we're going to go to Bot 101 probably for the seventh time. Randy, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve.
I say Bot 101 because you pulled an article about John McCain trying to solicit. Let me just say before we go any further that my Twitter handle is at Steve Bertrand, so I would encourage people to follow me. Or my public page on Facebook. My private one is full, but there's a public one, so follow me there. There, I just did something I'm not supposed to do.
I don't write your rules, so, I mean, you can do whatever you would
like. The advice is that you're not supposed to solicit followers, right?
Well, you're not supposed to solicit followers on Twitter if you're a politician. I think the politician thing might be key.
So McCain did, right? He was just short of 3 million.
Just short of 3 million. Almost exactly a week ago, noon last Monday, McCain kind of posted, hey, we're like 7,000 followers away from 3 million. Give us a follow. And so McCain actually started losing followers because people took a minute to realize, like, hey, you know, I either forgot I was following John McCain or else, you know, I don't like this petty grab for attention. And so people kind of started rapidly unfollowing.
So he saw his numbers go down pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly,
I mean, you know, down thousands, tens of thousands.
Right, tens of thousands. And now he's actually up above 3 million thanks to
I think he's at 3.3.
Something. Last I checked, yeah, I think it was 3.2 last I checked.
Okay.
But you probably checked it.
Make me a liar for 100,000
people.
More
recently. Or 100,000 bots.
Well, that's the thing. So then the story said, yeah, well, he took off, went up again big time, but they sort of credited that to bots. And
yeah.
We have talked about it, all joking aside. I'm still not quite sure I understand who would have been behind the bots and why they would have gotten involved.
So it can actually be anyone. For example, half of Donald Trump's Twitter followers are bots. And this isn't, you know, like a crazy left-wing media conspiracy theory. A lot of accounts have bots, and it's either the account holder will buy them to look like they have a boosted following, or, you know, even a rival will buy them to say, like, look at here, his accounts or his followers are all fake.
So they'll buy the bots, buy the bot-produced followers,
and then
call expose
the account
them.
Holder out on it. And it can really go either way. You can never tell where they're coming from.
And it's like Bitcoins here. To explain this, so I would buy someone to, a bot would just generate followers.
A bot is a follower, so it's a fake follower. It's not a real person behind that account.
So I go to a bot trafficker to create followers for me?
Yes, you can buy them, and you can assign them to your own account, someone else's account. Sometimes random bots will even follow random accounts just based on hashtags or based on the people that they're following or who are following them.
So what percentage of the people on Twitter aren't people at all?
That's a very good question, Steve, but I can assure you that I am a real person.
Are you
helps.
Really? I know you're real because I follow you on my Facebook ticker along the side of my... Wait a minute, that's gone.
That is gone. Maybe. It's disappeared for a lot of users.
As I remember the ticker, it used to drive me crazy because it was kind of frenetic. It was on my screen on the Facebook homepage, right? And it was this running sort of digest of who was doing what.
Up in the upper right-hand corner. And anytime any one of your friends made any sort of action, they liked a photo, they friended somebody, they commented on a status, you would get a little notification in the sticker.
And so if you're trying to be a little calm on social media, which is difficult anyway.
It's very anxiety.
This thing was always moving.
Yeah.
It was always moving. And now it's disappeared?
It's disappeared, yeah. A lot of people, I know mine, as soon as we had the ability to hide it, I hid it.
I must have done that too because I haven't seen mine in a long time.
This thing's been around since 2011. I don't think I've personally looked at it since 2012. So a lot of users that did look at it, apparently there was a small percentage out there. Not sure how they compare to bots.
I'll name Mrs. Kravitz.
But yeah, they noticed that it's disappeared.
And so why would it have disappeared?
Probably just to make some room for more stuff on your Facebook feed. Facebook's so always messing with stuff. So
it's not some sort of big social change or anything like that. It's run its course.
Yeah, it's probably just done with.
Speaking of that, running its course, there have been a number of Facebook executives or past executives who are sort of coming out now and apologizing for the monster they created.
Yeah, and not just Facebook, but social media itself. The most recent, I know you're talking about this Verge story that I shared with you today. Chamath Palihapitiya, not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but he was with Facebook in 2007 and said, and I quote, "I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works," which is a very, very strong quote.
And so the short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops we've created are destroying us. He's probably still rich.
He is, and he did later go back on his word by saying another quote that the company overwhelmingly does good in the world.
So I was going to ask you that. Do you think there is a sense among some of these creators that they have truly created a monster?
I think so, especially after the recent election and all of the fallout we've seen with, you know, Russian targeted ads.
Maybe
and bots.
I should ask if they created a monster that they think now is out of control.
I think so. I mean, it's not just Facebook anymore. There's all these other social media companies as well. Even if Facebook wanted to pull the plug, they couldn't.
I'm an Instagram person now, and I would encourage you all to follow me on Instagram.
Owned by Facebook.
Just kidding. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. Randy Schaefer from the Chicago Tribune, digital editor. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me, Steve.